Welcome back to the next installment of our podcast. Today, we are going to be revisiting a subject that we have not talked about in years on the podcast, and that's contact teams. Today, I have with me Billy Perry, a retired detective in EOD from Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. While he was there, also part of their SWAT team, their dive team, the Marine unit, and even though he is technically retired, not really, because you're still training with him.
I am 36 hours a week
on an almost daily basis. Also joining with us, we have Harry Jimenez, who retired from Homeland Security Investigations after 30 years with DHS at the federal level, and is now serving as the deputy chief for Dimmitt County Sheriff's Office. Harry, welcome. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. So, Billy, I know that this is a subject that is passionate and dear to your heart. Why? Why so?
I think this is a very difficult topic. It's a challenging topic. It's one that we approach with great reverence, with great seriousness, with great thought, and we want to come at this from a position of knowledge and a position of seriousness, and with as much reverence as we can muster for it. It is the contact team, and what does a contact team do, and what is their primary job? And you know, in any active incident, our two objectives is to stop the killing and stop the dying. And our community, the law enforcement community, for a long time was really, really, really good at that. And we're still okay at it, but we're having challenges. There have been some times when we have been less than suboptimal. That we've been suboptimal, and I think with this, and part of it is we're going through an institutional inertia paradigm shift, frankly, where I think some things are changing, and you know, at the end of the day, we have a responsibility to stop that, and
so
we're challenged with that.
You say suboptimal. Without getting into specifics of incidents, can you give me some examples of the types of behavior you're talking about that's not really what we want?
Well, you know, I think, and we were talking
or the reverse of that, Billy. Give me the examples of what we do
right,
want.
Right, exactly. That's where I was going to go with that. You read my mind. You know, we were just talking about it, Harry and I, and one of the things is knowing what our mission is, and that's part of the issue is, you know, as law enforcement, we've had mission creep. And what I mean by that is, you know, we've gone from, we're social workers, you know, and we're real estate landlords, and we're civil people, and we're traffic crash investigators, and we're, you know, and the list goes on and on and on. And
like the MacGyver of law enforcement.
Mental health counselors. Absolutely. I mean, we're like a multi-tool. And you know, the problem with that is we do a lot of things okay, but we don't do anything really, really good. And the one thing that differentiates us from everybody is our ability to go in and stop the bad guys, to stop the killing. And, you know, and we say that, and we're not flipping about this by any means. And the other challenge that we've had with law enforcement is I don't even know that it's a watering down or a diminishing of our professionalism, or if we got stagnant or where we are, and we want to be treated like professionals. And I say this to the people that I train all the time, but what are we doing to improve our professionalism? And are we acting like professionals? And do we know? And I ask every officer, not just every officer supervisor, not just every agency head, ask every officer, do you know what your state statute is for justifiable use of force? And it's, they don't call it response resistance, they call it use of force. In state, in Florida, it's 776. You know, do you know what your order is for response to resistance? Because most departments and agencies do call it that. Do you know what your weapons platforms are? And do you know what the nomenclature is for every round that you fire and why you use it and what it is? Because that's part of the professionalism component. And I say all that and you say, well, what does that matter? It matters a lot. And I think, you know, if you don't know your orders, if you don't know your statutes, if you do not know, if you can't define immediate, imminent, right off the bat, I mean, and use them in a sentence, then you're behind the eight ball. If you don't know the things that we're talking about, I mean, when it comes to a response to resistance or three periods of time, we have a duty to use force, we can use force, and we can't use force. So, you know, and I say that all the time to people, so, and I'll say them again for you in a better order. We can't use force. There's something happening, we cannot use force in this response to resistance. Then there may be another instance where you can, You can use force in response resistance. And number three, you have a duty to use force. And if you ask, well, when's that duty to use force? Well, you know, if you have something with a, here's another term that if you don't know, you need to rethink some things. If you're receiving actionable intelligence and you do not act on that, that's a problem, because that's our one job. That's what we can do that nobody else can do. You know, firefighters can't do that. I mean, you know, you're not equipped for that. And we're not saying be cowboys or cowgirls or cow people or war. You know, we're not saying go in and be loose cannons. You know, not at all. Not anything. Not to be reckless. And it's dangerous. But if you have actionable intelligence, you've got to make entry. You've got to go in and do things. And alerts, and I know our department, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office, 100%. If you're there and it's one person and you're there, we make one person entries. Alert says that. And if that's something that your agency doesn't do, that's something you need to take up with your agency. But we have to go in and do that. We have to stop the killing. Once we stop the killing, then we stop the dying. And we, you know, we had to undergo another paradigm shift a while back about the golden hour. Mm. You know, we didn't know anything about the clock. You know, and Harry will tell you, we would high five, man, you know, we've done okay here. But you know, now we know now's when the work really starts. Well, if you impede that golden hour with your slow response to that, man, that's a challenge.
Yeah.
And that's where we, and you know, we lose ground with it, you know, because, you know,
well, it's one of the key elements that we address right at the very opening of our classes is to get everybody focused on the reality that it's not just about the bad guy. Yes, we have to stop the threat. We have to neutralize the threat. Absolutely, that's critical. But that's not the only thing that kills people. The clock kills people. Time kills people. You know, and the example we say in class is, what good does it do to get the bad guy quickly if the bullets that he fired are still killing people because they're bleeding to death?
Sure. Because
we failed to get that medical appointment. But because I don't want to get us off on a tangent necessarily about into the RTFs a little bit. You know, Harry, Billy mentioned this idea of getting in and, you know, getting downrange and dealing with it. And, yeah, you said it's dangerous. Well, no, it is. You know, police officers are going to get shot at. They can get killed by getting shot. Firefighters can get killed in a burning building. Paramedics and EMTs can get killed by COVID or AIDS or anything else. So we all have these jobs where we know the potential is that there is deadly consequences that can come our way. And we're not flippant about that.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all.
Not at all. It's just one of those realities that when you pin on the badge, mm-hmm. whichever badge you're pinning on,
right.
you come to terms with. So
Michelle Cook said it well.
Yeah. Yeah, she did.
She did.
You know, Harry, what are your thoughts on this?
So absolutely. I'm with Billy. There's a, let's start with the last point, right? You're a law enforcement officer. The day that you strap that gun to your waist, early in the morning to go to your beat, or in the middle of the day because you have a night shift, you know the responsibility you have. And you need to understand what are your authorities, when do you need to act. And many times, and as we go around the nation talking to law enforcement officers and all the first responders, and we ask them, we have these conversations, say, hey, you know, how you feel, what's happening in your neighborhoods, in your communities. We understand that many officers may find themselves, if they don't understand what are their authorities and responsibilities with that weapon, in a case of an active shooter, for example, going through that door, being solo entry or coming in with two or three officers, or creating a contact team right outside the door to go in and engage and neutralize that threat, they're going to hesitate.
Right.
And hesitation is going to kill you, and it's going to kill more people because those bullets are killing.
You know, active shooters are a different animal. And the reason I say that is because they are. It's completely different than anything else we do. And I think one of the big myths that has been propagated in law enforcement is, and we hear it all over, we hear it everywhere we are, is, well, the most important thing is that I go home at night. No, it's not. No, it's not. Nobody voluntold you to do this. You went through a lot to do this. And the law enforcement officer's code of ethics, when I learned it, it was 256 words. Now it's a little bit more. They've altered it a little bit. But nowhere in there does it say anything about you going home at night.
Yeah.
You know, your daughters go home at night. Your sons go home at night. My daughter goes home at night. I don't, you know, that. And honestly, the active shooter time is a weird time because if you're actually, if you as a law enforcement officer are taking fire, it's actually good.
Because they're not shooting at somebody else. Innocent
people. Absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, and that's an uncomfortable reality. And if you go, are you saying get shot at? No, but I'm saying if you are, it's better than, you know. But I mean, it just, it is what it is. And again, we're not being flippant about it. We're just being real. And you have got to know, you've got to know what constitutes actionable intelligence, especially in your jurisdiction, because ours is very free and open. And it, you know, it is gunfire, it's brass, bodies, blood. It is calls for help. It is moans. It is intelligence that a forcible felony is taking place in a room with them. You know, all that. We're going to make entry. I'm telling you. I know we will. I mean, and I think, you know, we owe that. We owe that to our community. And I think we have to know those time periods. We have to know our job, know our craft. And we have to take it so seriously. And it is such a serious and a sombering and a sobering topic.
Absolutely. Billy, you've got a very, very strong SWAT and tactical background. And Harry, I introduced you as Homeland Security Investigations, which is belies your tactical background. And I don't want to share all those details publicly, but you're not, you wore a suit nice, but I have to tell the audience, the first time I met Harry at a training exercise, I had met him at the pre-briefing, the safety briefing the night before, and he's fed in a full suit. And the next morning, he's in tactical gear with a shotgun slung over his chest. And I thought, okay, this guy's not the Fed I'm usually seeing to. But Harry, when we think about tactics, and I'm going to ask both of you this, is there safety in numbers? I mean, if you're the only guy there, you go in, I get that, right? I get that. But what about the second, the third guy, the fourth guy showing up? Is there safety in trying to link up in a team?
Maybe.
Okay.
And one of the rules for ALERT and for what we do where we are is to stay together, communicate, you know, because it's always good to have a friend. And, you know, but I say that honestly, and I say that very candidly, and I think it's one of the things about C3 is we address the hard issues, frankly. And I think that, and I think it's real, and I think it's one of the things that lends to its validity, and frankly why I'm here, and I think why Harry's here too, because we do talk honestly and candidly and forthrightly about things, and we do address the tough subjects. And, you know, every firefighter's not the same, and every police officer's not the same. Every school teacher is not the same. Every nurse isn't the same. And every doctor is not the same. And so, yeah, man, I mean, there may be four officers there that are like, whoo, I won the lottery today. And then there may be four officers who are like, hey, guys, block traffic. Yeah. I mean,
can you control traffic?
Right.
Can you set up a perimeter for me?
And that's a hard truth. And those of you, those people that are real, that are listening, are like, yes, that is so true. Yeah,
but Billy, but that's the reason why. But this is the reason why. It's true. We all know it. And I know the listeners are going to be thinking, I can identify who's that guy in my department.
Exactly.
And if you can't, it's you.
But reality is, that's the reason why it's so important that the professional development,
the compression
of
component,
enforcement.
I agree.
Absolutely. Because you have to continue growing, and
knowledge
you have to be able to, when you arrive to a door, the shots are being fired, and you and I are the first two officers, and we need to link up. We might not need to talk. If we have trained together,
right,
if we have the
absolutely.
Base, the basic threshold, here it is, this is my baseline of training, we look at each other, we know what we need
sure.
to do, we link, and we do God's work. However,
absolutely.
If you're not training, if you don't know your codes, if you don't know if you are rightfully using your firearm,
right.
you're going to hesitate.
Absolutely.
And hesitation is going to cost life.
And it's more than that. And it has to be able to be performed in an autonomous environment. This is a line level. I mean, you think about it, the most basic law enforcement officer runs around with a firearm on every day, and you don't have to call every time, hey, I'm about to be in a shooting, is that good? You don't do that. I mean, you need to be able to operate autonomously, and the same thing holds true in these situations. And you can't be ordered, don't make entry, don't do that. I mean, this has to be something that you have to equip your people with.
Naturally.
to act on an autonomous level, competently, professionally and efficiently. Absolutely. And you know, and that leads us back into the other arenas. I mean, where, you know, and I say this to the people I instruct all the time, what's the percentage of shots we fire that miss? Zero. Because every round hits something, and we're responsible for 100% of them. And we should be. And that's okay. And we don't get the luxury of spraying and praying. We have to.
But the problem is that you go to some departments, and the first thing that they answer to that is, well, each bullet has a lawyer attached to it. That's hesitation.
That is doubt. And honestly, and it doesn't. And we were talking about this, you know, the other day, or actually last night.
Yeah.
You know, when people, well, there's liability in this. Well, you know, the liability is not really where you think it is. And anytime somebody says that in a class that I'm in, we're like, well, there's liability, I'll stop. Stop, break out your Google machine.
Folks, he's not kidding. I've been in class with him where he's done it.
Yeah. I'll stop, break out your Google machine, and find me the last time somebody was successfully litigated for that. And it doesn't. The liability lies where you don't really think it does, and it's much more common sense applicated than people think.
And of course, you know, we're talking about contact teams. You know, we know that if we have to get to a point where we have a situation and we're rolling in and we arrive – you might be the first person coming through the door. Right. You might be by yourself. But at the same time, we hope that more officers come to respond to that mm-hmm. to that call for help.
Sure.
And they can be from different jurisdictions. They can be detectives, whether right. they're plainclothes. Exactly. So you want to be able to say,
good job,
okay.
by the way, San Bernardino.
Yes. Shout out. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4 officers. We teach and we try to get them anything from 2 to 4 officers to start creating that right. contact team, because right. you're moving together, you'll be able to put hands on patients.
Sure,
but most important is you want to stop the shooting. You know, you want to stop that threat.
Here's the thing, and I introduced this. I taught a class last Thursday and Friday, and we were talking about the clock, and I could see the light come on when I said, you do realize that the clock. That golden hour didn't start when you stopped the bad guy. The golden hour started when the bad guy started.
Yeah.
So, see, that's the thing that
their clock starts when the bleeding
and
starts.
That's what we lose sight of. We think, well, it doesn't. We've got, once we engage him, no. And, you know, that's it. And, again, you know, when we say it, you know, who our enemy is and, you know, who we're fighting. And, you know. And it is bad. Now, all this to say that we can't have 19 individual, well-meaning lone wolf soldiers running yeah. around.
I was actually just going to ask you about that. So, I mean, yeah. we talked about being the first guy, mm-hmm. being the first officer through the door. Let's go a little deeper in the stack, second, mm-hmm. third, fourth. What does that look like?
Second, third, and fourth, hopefully they're going to get there about the same time. Now, we don't do the diamond stuff anymore. I mean, we do different, you know, we do different movements and whatnot, but we do train on that in our agency. And if you're not training, it's like finances. If you're not planning, you know, if you're failing to plan, you're planning to fail. And I'll say the same thing with this. And frankly, this is one of those things where you really can't afford not to invest in this for your agency. And I don't mean just the management side of it. I mean the boots on the ground side of it too. And that's part of the challenge that we're seeing. But I think with the second, third, fourth, hopefully they're going to be there with them. Once we get in the fifth or sixth, somebody needs to start driving this train.
Oh, absolutely. You're expecting that fifth person. Mm-hmm. You know, we call it the fifth man.
We do
right?
call it the fifth man.
And of course, the way we teach, we allow the communities to adapt to it. Could be right. the 6, 7,
it could
8,
be.
9.
And that's what I was going to yes. say, because everything we do in law enforcement is a tense and uncertain, rapidly developing situation. Everything's fluid, dynamic. You know, it's ever changing.
Can you slow that down and say that again? Because when they go to transcribe the podcast, they're not going to know what you just said.
Tense and uncertain, rapidly developing situation that is fluid and dynamic in nature.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Carry on.
And so. My southernness catches up sometimes. So anyway, at the end of the day, you know, somebody has to drive that. And the king doesn't always wear the crown. And again, if tactical, you know, Tammy is the one that shows up as fifth person, you're like, thank goodness she's here. She's going to be the one that goes in there and eats this. I'm not going to pull her aside and have her drive the train if, you know, does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
If Admin Andy is right behind her and he's an amazing person at doing the other, You know, it's fluid and it can move. You know,
and the main thing is we understand that, like you said, we don't want 10, 15, 20 lone wolves running around the school or running around a building or running around a mall like happening in El Paso, right? You have everybody responding to the Walmart shooting. Well, somebody there pumped the brakes, called dispatch, and said, okay, I got tactical. I have at least 4 officers inside. Let them know on the radio. And you can ask tactical, send me the next 4 officers to my location. I'm going to be at the corner of the parking lot. So you can then, that person makes another contact team and starts slowing things down.
Let me bring up another thing before we forget it. Discrimination. That's another thing that we are sorely lacking in law enforcement today is discrimination. And I mean discriminatory shooting. Yep. You know, a lot of agencies have a 5-step discrimination process, whole body, hands, belt, waistline, immediate area, and demeanor. Looking at the whole body, the hands, the belt, waistline, immediate area, and demeanor. Because we're not just looking for guns. Because a lot of good people have guns.
Yeah.
Lots of good people have guns.
In Texas, almost everybody carries.
Right.
Yeah.
Regardless of
you were allowed in Texas if you didn't have one.
Right. Inconvenient truth, it really does. And so a lot of good people do have guns. A lot of retired off-duty officers, a lot of people that are really good, you know. So, and they do fix things, you know, the White Settlement Church, you know. I mean, there's
absolutely,
you know, there's a lot of things, you know, that happen. Sutherland, you know.
Sutherland Springs,
exactly. So, I mean, you know, at the end of the day, so that's why you don't just look for a gun and then engage it, because you need to look for the whole body, the hands, the belt waistline. You're looking for markings. Looking for demeanor, you're looking for all that. Well, we do 6. We do a face, whole body, hands, belt, waistline, immediate area, and demeanor. The reason being is because I can go hairy and I'm done. I don't have to say, wait a minute, man, I'm looking at your whole body, your hands, your belt, waistline, immediate area. So, you know, but I think that's something we need to do. And the reason I bring that up here is because when you're moving through, just because you see somebody with a gun, it doesn't mean you need to service them, because you need to discriminate them. And this is something that if you're not teaching your department, now, this is libelous. This is something that is liability ridden.
Oh, that's okay. I'm thinking about all the letters I'm going to get on this podcast, but go right ahead.
You're welcome. And so it's all true and defendable. So,
amen.
You know, right. So, you know, the safety priority matrix is defendable in court, and used to be called the priority of life scale. Now it's the safety priority matrix. Again, professionalism. But I think, you know, when you're moving through, you need to be able to discriminate. You need to be able to link up with your initial contact team, because they're going to be owning that position where the bad person is.
Yes.
That way you can start, they're going to own that, and that's great. And then we're going to start looking for other survivors, and then we're going to start clearing the building. Then we start clearing the building, and then after we set up cordons and we set up CCP. If you don't know what a CCP is, if you do not know what an AEP is, if the most junior grunt officer that you've got does not know CCP, AEP, RTF, and imminent, immediate, all these words that I've been saying, step it up.
Yeah.
The end.
And not only that, you know, you bring an example about discrimination, and it happens, and this is another conversation that we have as we go around the nation teaching these classes, especially in the advanced. We provide the students with several scenarios, and many people approach us and ask us, well, the shooter stopped shooting. Can we shoot the bad guy? Because somewhere along the line in their training, they're being told that if the individual is actively engaging, they can put the threat down.
Right.
And they miss the whole picture that person has the means to do harm, had a gun.
Hence imminent and immediate.
Imminent and immediate. They have already shown their capacity, capability, and intention.
And propensity.
To conduct violent events and hit and hurt people, and they just turn around and start babbling and calling names, and many officers stop in their tracks thinking, can I service this individual?
Right. And if you can, if that's what's needed, it doesn't. If they will allow us to take them into custody, I'm all about taking them into custody. Let's take them into custody, you know.
It's amazing how often that is happening now. You know, I was going to say, that is a shift we've seen in the data over the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
We have fewer that are committing suicide. Mm-hmm. The rate of suicide is, nosediving is too strong a way to say it.
Right.
But it is substantially decreased.
Sure.
And the one that's increased is the ones that are being taken into custody and the ones that are fleeing.
No, absolutely. And if you look, the numbers of of suicidal, you know, suicide ending by suicide on active shooter was like a third, and it went down in the 20s. But what went up was the fact that they're now engaging the responding officers.
Yes.
They might be barricading. They might be moving to another place, which take us to
sure.
If you have a good tactical person right. and understand that the individual moved to a second floor, you still have people dying in the first floor,
right.
but you can still conduct saving lives in the first floor.
If
you
we have people of service
exactly.
handling exactly.
So
and I think, and yeah, I think that's 100% true. And I think one of the other paradigm shifts that we've had to explain to officers is if they do escape, which is that's another one, that's a win.
Yeah, because they're not killing
people.
They're
not killing people right now. I mean, yeah. And we have a whole slew of really aggressive, crazy detectives for us that are going to go find that person, you know? And I mean, they're really good at it. They're going to find them.
Yeah.
And I mean, let them go do that. But we've mission accomplished. We've stopped the killing. Now let's stop the dying.
Now, you raised an issue that I want to talk, you know, before we run out of time, I want both of you to kind of talk about a little bit. So if you have an active shooter event, you make your entry, team, no team, you know, whatever the case may be. You neutralize the threat because the threat's presenting. That's pretty clear, cut and dry. And, of course, our priority is, you know, number one, stop the killing. You know, neutralize the threat. Number two, rescue. Number three, clear. Can you talk a little bit about those instances where it was an active shooter event, but you get there, you've made entry, and the shooting has stopped. You don't know where the bad guy is. You don't know whether he is self-terminated, left the scene, you know, hold up, hostage barricade, but the shooting has stopped. And one of the things that we see so often that is very difficult, happens in training, happens in real life, is that ability to switch gears, to say, okay, we've gone from an active threat to not an active threat. There may still be a threat present, but now it's a question mark. Can we talk a little bit about that process and that transition and changing gears and moving to the rescue?
Well, advanced is the basics mastered. So all we do is we revert to SIM. We set up security. We have an immediate action plan in the event they do come back or we get more actionable intelligence, and we do medical. It's seriously that simple. I mean, it's...
Absolutely. If you don't have an active threat, you don't have the driving force that we call it, right? Hey,
what you were calling actionable intelligence.
Exactly. Actionable intelligence.
Now, you have body armor, you have weapons, you have enough for your partners. You can make an area secure enough, make that a warm zone now. And it's not hot anymore. They're not... Bullets are not flying, and... You can take care of the people that are bleeding. You need to save lives. And you're going to have the rest of the time to search and find that shooter. If it went away, you're going to get the intel. If it's barricaded, you're going to find out. But you cannot stop and be inactive because when you stop, the clock is ticking. People are bleeding. People are dying.
You know what I like in this too? And Adam Penley is the one that initially likened it this way to me is it's a normal shooting in a city.
Explain.
It's on a bigger scale. I mean, you know, we have a lot of shootings where we are, and the shooter's generally not there when we get there. Weird, you know, and the shooter's generally not there when y'all get there in the ambulance.
That's right.
But
otherwise, we wouldn't be there.
Right, but you get there, but there's nothing stopping him from circling around and coming back.
Right.
But we don't think about that. It's no different, but you've got officers there, and we're setting up security. We have an immediate action plan, even if it's ad hoc,
and we apply medical.
We're doing medical. So honestly, if as soon as we don't get actionable intelligence, we're pushing, and everything's quiet, you know, we don't have actionable intelligence, then we're going to set up the corridors, the cordons, the CCPs, the AEPs. People know what that means, and then start rescuing, and then start because the clock is running. That's what you have to understand. The clock has been running since before you were dispatched. Let that sink in. Before the radio call went out, the clock had already started.
And our job is to save lives.
Period.
You know, one of the things that I've seen happen in training, in the scenarios that we're running, and I love to see it, because you meet a lot of officers who haven't really, I guess, mentally walked through this issue of changing gears. You know, mm-hmm. they're expecting to find the bad guy.
Right.
And now we don't really know, we haven't found him and we don't know what's going on, but we got to change gears. But what I love to see, and I love when I see the students, the participants of the training, when they hit this reality that, okay, contact team one and two are going to support the rescue and the medical operation, and we're going to get some RTFs downrange. And then,
if you don't know what an RTF is, fix that.
Yeah. And then contacts three and four are going to be working on clearing. Mm-hmm. They're going to do some more work to look mm-hmm. for bad guys, or
there are other survivors
yeah.
that are hiding.
Exactly.
You know, you're clearing for survivors.
And finding that. And by the way, if you're wondering about the terms, I'm with Billy. Hit the website because we define all that stuff there. But CCP is a casualty collection point. This is a point inside your downrange area, your threat area, where you set up security, you get a secured room, and it becomes a warm zone. It may be in an island of a hot zone, but it's a warm zone where we can assemble casualties and provide treatment and then ultimately work on evacuating them out. The AEP, the Ambulance Exchange Point, this is an area where we do the handoff from the rescue task forces that are working in the warm zones to the ambulance, and it's not always in a cold zone. And sometimes we need, in fact, oftentimes, we need to secure that ambulance exchange point so that we can operate. But the
And if you're really good and efficient, they're close or the same.
Exactly, because carrying people sucks.
Ranks right up there with the root canals and alimony. It does.
So, you know, but here's the reason why we do that is the clock.
Right.
Again, mm-hmm. if you set up a shuttle operation, you are burning precious minutes, and not right. like two or three, but 10 or 15.
Right. On a clock that has already been running
yes.
before you got notified of the incident.
Yes.
Before you ever acknowledged, before you ever made your way there, before you ever did anything, that clock has been going. I'm going to hammer that home.
Absolutely. Harry, final thoughts. We got to wrap up.
We're here to save lives. We owe to our communities that we secure and protect, to be professional, to maintain continuous education, to get ready for that day. We hope that you have a 20, 25, 30-year career and you never have to encounter that day. But you need to train for that day because it's going to be the time, it's going to kill people, and you can shave seconds, precious seconds from that time.
Absolutely.
Billy?
Unfortunate truth. Sometimes response resistance, sometimes a judicious application of force saves lives. Sorry, not sorry. It is what it is.
There it is. Well, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in. Gentlemen, thank you for being
thank
here.
You.
And thank you for us over this
thank
issue.
Thank you for addressing this seriously sensitive subject that we have glossed over as a community and as a nation.
We got to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean,
thank you for the opportunity. Away. Thank you so much.
I realize, you know, to a certain degree, there's probably a dozen different things that we've talked about or said here that could be pointed to and said, hey, it's politically incorrect. Mm-hmm. I get that. But that doesn't change the reality that people get killed if you don't do the job.
Do it.
If you don't take care of business, people end up dying. And that's mm-hmm. why we didn't enter this business to just watch people die.
Fact. And one of my heroes has a saying, there are things worse than dying. And there's things that my own mission to me would be much worse than something else.
Yeah. Billy, Harry, thanks for coming in
thank
today.
You.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being with us today. Please, if you haven't subscribed to the podcast already, please hit the subscribe button. Make sure that you get notice of that. If you have any questions for us, please reach out through their website or give us a call at the office. Until next time, stay safe.